I'm a little tired of the weary throwaway line that there is no such thing as the gay sensibility. Of course there is such a thing as the gay sensibility. Of course gay men and women think in some fundamental ways differently from straights. It is not just about what we do in bed.
This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio magazine. I'm Musha Chappell. The Scottish Parliament kills Section 28, hate crimes take a beating in New York, Tennessee, and the U.S. Senate, and horrormeister Clive Barker raises more than hell. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Leo Garcia.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending June 24th, 2000. Months of controversy in Scotland ended this week as the Parliament voted 99-17 to repeal Section 28, the notorious Thatcher-era prohibition against local governments devoting resources to the promotion of homosexuality or to teaching in schools that same-gender couples are pretend family relationships. Surveys found the law has deterred educators from intervening in anti-gay harassment in schools and from supporting gay and lesbian youth. But although the law had never actually been enforced, the religious right feared it was the only thing preventing classrooms from being flooded with pornographic propaganda. Those fears were inflamed by the huge Keep the Clause media campaign funded by multimillionaire Brian Suter. Communities Minister Wendy Alexander told the Parliament, "Week in, week out, we faced a campaign without precedent in public life. The charge that we were somehow in the business of promoting gay sex lessons was always deeply dishonest and an insult to Scotland's teachers. So discrimination needed to be faced down. We will protect children and honor those who care for and love them in an inclusive way." Keep the Clause and Scotland's top Catholic Cardinal Thomas Winning both claimed a victory for new guidelines for teachers, including a reference to the responsibilities of parenthood and marriage, as well as the generic stable relationships. But according to at least one analyst, the marriage reference had been in the guidelines all along.
Pressure from several religious right groups failed to reverse household products giant Procter & Gamble's decision to withdraw its sponsorship from a new syndicated television show for anti-gay radio talk show host Dr. Laura Schlesinger. With an ad budget of $3 billion per year, P&G's dropping the show rocked the media world and marked the most dramatic result of ongoing protests by gays and lesbians across the U.S. Five major national religious right groups and a local group from Cincinnati, Ohio, where P&G is headquartered, met with senior managers. The company had hoped for a broader discussion of developing more family-oriented television programming, but the groups focused exclusively on demanding that P&G buy back into Dr. Laura. The company's newly elected leadership reviewed the situation, but agreed with their predecessors that Schlesinger had become too controversial. A spokesperson for the religious right group said, "P&G right now is in the homosexual activist camp."
In other big business news this week, the Coca-Cola Company announced it will be extending spousal health care benefits to same-gender domestic partners of its gay and lesbian employees. Coke is the 99th of the Fortune 500 companies to make the move. The world's largest soft drink company is also considering extending the benefit to its international workforce in nearly 200 other countries.
The Canadian Senate has given its final approval to Bill C-23, the government's omnibus bill to give same-gender couples the same legal standing as unmarried heterosexuals. Although senators were not entirely happy with the bill as written, they decided not to amend it, so it will not be returning to the Commons. All that remains for the so-called Modernization of Benefits and Obligations Bill to become law is the formality of royal assent.
Germany's coalition government announced this week that it has reached agreement on a strong domestic partnership measure it's promised to introduce in the parliament before the legislative session ends in July. The announcement was made by openly gay Green Party MP Volker Beck. Unlike an earlier draft, the new partner's bill includes some of the most valuable benefits sought by activists: marriage-like recognition of gay and lesbian couples for taxation, health insurance, pensions, and immigration. However, adoption rights are not included. Although the Social Democratic Party that leads the government had promised partnership legislation when wooing gay votes in its election campaign 2 years ago, the government was not able to move its bill through the parliament last year. This year, some conservatives are hoping they can block it in the upper house, where the coalition lacks a majority. Meanwhile, the German army is drafting plans to recognize the same-gender partners of gay and lesbian military personnel, including giving them allowances and housing equivalent to married couples.
A cabinet minister announced that a working group, including representatives of the parties forming Belgium's coalition government, have agreed that civil marriage should be broadened to include same-gender couples. The registered partnerships established in Belgium last year were little more than ceremonial, to activists' great disappointment.
In Iceland, where gay and lesbian registered partners already had nearly all the benefits of legal marriage, the parliament voted recently to allow partners to adopt each other's children. Although conservatives lobbied hard against the move, polls found that two-thirds of Icelanders supported adoption rights for same-gender couples.
In Britain, a venerable national women's organization, generally viewed as supporting family values, decided this week to lobby for legal recognition of gay and lesbian couples. The National Council of the Town's Women's Guilds, representing a total of some 80,000 members, voted 736 to 687 to take up the cause after an emotional debate. Their specific lobbying goals for same-gender couples include housing and pension rights and next-of-kin status.
The French government announced this week that it will be making sexual orientation a protected category in civil rights legislation for the first time ever. Following a meeting with nine leading lesbi-gay groups, Employment Minister Martine Aubry said she would make the amendment to social modernization legislation already pending in the parliament. Current law prohibits employers from discrimination in hiring and firing based on moral behavior. Under Aubry's amendment, both employers and landlords will be barred from bias based on sexual orientation. She said, "It is the government's duty to make sure the law is clear and to say it is not permissible to discriminate against homosexuals when hiring staff or to refuse to rent an apartment to a homosexual couple."
Also using sexual orientation for the first time ever was the New York State Legislature. In the closing moments of the legislative session this week, both houses approved a compromise version of a hate crimes bill agreed on with Republican Governor George Pataki, who has promised to sign it into law. The margin in the Senate was about 4-1 and in the Assembly about 5-1. For 11 consecutive years, the Assembly had passed similar hate crimes measures, but because of the reference to gays and lesbians, until this year, Republican leadership in the Senate had never allowed a floor vote. The state's hate crimes bill coalition, including many groups affected by the legislation, remained staunch in supporting inclusion of gays and lesbians while knowing they could have won enactment by excluding them.
Still another first-ever use of sexual orientation came this week as Tennessee Governor Dawn Sundquist signed a hate crimes bill into law. The Nashville-based Lesbian and Gay Coalition for Justice and the American Civil Liberties Union of Tennessee have been lobbying for this law for 3 years.
The U.S. came a step closer to including homophobic assaults in federal hate crimes law with a Senate vote of 57-42. The vote had been expected to be so close that Vice President Al Gore interrupted his presidential campaigning to be present to break a tie if necessary, but 13 Republicans broke with their party leadership to support it. Only one Democrat opposed it. What has long been referred to as the Hate Crimes Prevention Act was added as an amendment to the Defense Authorization Act. However, it's not likely to be added to the House version of the defense bill, so it might be dropped by a conference committee as it was last year.
U.S. President Bill Clinton issued an executive order this week prohibiting discrimination based on sexual orientation in federally conducted education and training programs. The order covers programs by any executive branch department or agency, including schools, extracurricular activities, academic programs, occupational training, and scholarships and fellowships. While it doesn't apply to uniformed service members in military training programs, the Department of Defense was ordered to protect the rights of gay and lesbian civilians involved.
The world's first scout group to specifically welcome lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender members became official this week. Toronto's Rover Troop 129's first members included two men and four women who donned rainbow neckerchiefs in a special ceremony. Organizers say they've had nothing but support from Scouts Canada, and they're now working on developing a Ventures Troop for younger teens and a Beaver Group for children of gay and lesbian parents.
And finally, when 20 cops entered Toronto's Sailor's Gay Bar this week, it wasn't a raid. It was the first ever Police Chief's Pride Week reception. New Chief Julian Fantino came into his job with a bad rep among some gay activists, but he has been making serious outreach efforts to connect with the community. Although the cops and gays were a little standoffish at first, the party soon warmed up and even got a little rowdy. AIDS Committee of Toronto Director Mark Deacon caught the gay-friendly spirit of Toronto during Pride Week when he admitted, "I love shocking my friends and saying we hoisted the rainbow flag at City Hall on Monday and we're having drinks with the Chief of Police on Wednesday."
That's News Wrap for the week ending June 24th, 2000. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Leo Garcia.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
We promise that gay thrill master Clive Barker will not scare you when Steve Pride chats with him later in the program, so don't be afraid to stay tuned after this special report from Washington, D.C. The latest incarnation of the Hate Crimes Prevention Act passed the U.S. Senate on June 20th. Enthusiasm over the victory was tempered by the fact that the bill's chances of reaching a vote in the House are slim. But as Don Rush of Pacifica Network News reports, the move to expand federal jurisdiction in the investigation and prosecution of bias-motivated crimes and to add sexual orientation, gender, and disability as protected categories is gaining acceptance.
This is not the first time that a hate crimes bill has made its way to the Senate, and undoubtedly it will not be the last. For the last 30 years, civil rights advocates have pushed the legislation, and the Senate has even approved the measure before. The bill expands the federal authority to prosecute hate crimes, as well as to give assistance to local law enforcement officials in prosecuting them. The measure was placed as an amendment to the defense spending bill. Senator Ted Kennedy, author of the legislation.
For too long, the federal government has been forced to stay on the sidelines in the case of many hate crimes and to fight other hate crimes with one hand tied behind its back.
The recent killing of a gay man, Matthew Shepard, in Wyoming, has given momentum to the legislation. Commander David O'Malley with the Laramie Police Department said before Shepard's killing, he saw no need for hate crime legislation.
In this particular situation, he was driven through a 10-minute ride through hell. He was tied to a fence, he was hit in the area of the head at least 18 times, and he was left to die. And I truly believe that that type of action towards Matthew was specifically because of those two individuals' attitudes towards sexual orientation.
Opponents of hate crimes legislation argue that there are already laws in the books to deal with violent crime. Tim Lynch with the libertarian Cato Institute says the Shepard killing in Wyoming and the racially motivated death of a black man in Texas were cases in point.
The people who were responsible for those crimes were quickly apprehended by state and local officials, and they were tried and punished.
But it is the sexual orientation category that has many conservatives troubled. Senator Gordon Smith says while denouncing violence, his Republican colleagues fear supporting the bill.
And I know many in my own political base feel that because of these two words, sexual orientation, that this is inappropriate. But I remind them, in the spirit of love, that if the founder of the Christian religion can shame the Sadducees and the sanctimonious of his day into dropping their stones, then we can do the same.
Elizabeth Birch is the executive director of the Human Rights Campaign, a major gay rights organization, and she believes progress is being made.
What I've noticed in my years here in Washington What happens is that a conservative senator or member of Congress in general will take a step like this and the sky won't fall, and they'll feel better about themselves. And what it does is it opens up the courage and the possibility to take that next step to the Employment Non-Discrimination Act.
Supporters claim over 233 co-sponsors for the hate crimes bill in the House and the Senate. House Republican leaders, though, are not likely to allow the measure to become law. But Wade Henderson, head of the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights, says the terms of the debate have changed.
The debate that's taking place in the Senate is certainly different than the last time this bill was debated. We've had a number of highly recognized incidents that have really shown a very bright light on the problem of hate crime violence in America.
Don Rush, Washington.
The Senate passed the language of the Hate Crimes Prevention Act by a vote of 57 to 42. If there is no vote on the measure in the House, it will be in danger of dying in a House-Senate conference committee, just as its predecessor did last year.
Hello, this is Chastity Bono, and you're listening to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine.
The title Renaissance Man could have been coined for author, playwright, artist, film producer, director, and screenwriter Clive Barker. With over 40 books to his credit, including the bestsellers Weave World, Imagica, Galilee, and The Essential Clive Barker, Barker has also scripted 11 films, including the Hellraiser and Candyman series, and he directed Lords of Illusion and Nightbreed. He was the executive producer of the Academy Award-winning Gods and Monsters, which depicted the life of another gay horror film director, James Whale. In his spare time, Barker is a book illustrator and a critically acclaimed painter. This Way Out's Steve Pride spoke with this multi-talented and multifaceted man about his life, love, and those things that go bump in the night.
I am a man, and men are animals who tell stories. This is a gift from God, who spoke our species into being, but left the end of our story untold. That mystery is troubling to us. How could it be otherwise, without the final part, we think? How are we to make sense of all that went before, which is to say, our lives? So we make stories of our own, in fevered and envious imitation of our Maker, hoping that we'll tell, by chance, what God left untold, and finishing our tale, come to understand why we were born.
Clive Barker, writer, artist, filmmaker, weaver of fantastic worlds. There's very little sex in the work of Stephen King.
Right.
Your books are very sensual, very sexual.
Right. Why?
Why?
Sex is fascinating, isn't it? Sex is such a powerful force in our lives. And horror fiction and science fiction and fantasy fiction very often require as some portion of the narrative to drive a character into a place where he or she would not normally go. I cannot think of a more powerful motive force for that than desire, an erotic love. And so very often, more often than not, my characters are not frightened into corners, but seduced into corners. And that's an important distinction. I mean, I feel as though the dark side, if you will, exercises in my fiction a great attractiveness, a great seductiveness. I think actually in allowing the erotic element of the villain, the dark entity, to manifest itself, I'm simply following a much older tradition. A tradition which goes back to folklore, which goes back to mythologies of various kinds, in which seem to own up more freely to the idea that what is attractive about the dark side is often tied in with its sexual power. You know, Dracula is an incredibly sexual figure. The devil, I mean, going to the ultimate force for darkness, as it were, isn't profoundly sexual figure. And through the many myriad representations of the devil over the years that I've studied and read, sexuality and the sexual potency of that character are at the forefront.
I think the most homoerotic image I have seen is the poster for Nightbreed.
Right.
With Craig Schaefer.
Sure. I mean, that was a movie which was entirely about a subgroup of hidden individuals with their various rules and regulations and rituals into which this young man was brought and initiated, having left his girlfriend behind. Well, gee, what group can this represent? I mean, there was a certain number of people who, at the time that that picture came out, completely understood what the picture was about. They tended to be gay critics. Straight critics were just completely in the dark. It was as though the movie had to be decoded. And if you decoded it with a gay eye, then it was very clear what it was about. The villains were cops, psychoanalysts, and priests. The Nightbreed themselves were a hint of variegation. They were diverse, physically rather sexy. The whole thing was as gay a movie, I would argue, as Bride of Frankenstein.
Speaking of that, is there a gay sensibility?
For sure. I believe there is. And I've had this argument back and forth over the years, and the smartest person I ever had the argument with was Gore Vidal. And Vidal, of course, passionately believes that there is no such thing as a gay sensibility, even though I think he is a perfect example of it at work. I think that if you are brought up with something so essential to your sexuality, forbidden you, unexpressed, undebated, uncelebrated, and you live your life having to find codes in the movies that surround you, in the general culture, in comic books or whatever, which allow you to find places of identification, then from a very early age, you start to shape a different sensibility to the straight person, your straight brother, let's say, who sees everywhere around him in the culture images which perfectly reflect his sensibility. I was born in 52, a long time before Stonewall, a long time before the Wolfden Report actually made gay alliances legal in England. So when I was brought up, it was a crime, and you were in jail for a long time, 20 years perhaps, for doing something that came naturally to you. If you define yourself, therefore, as unnatural from a very early age, even if you don't quite understand the vocabulary, if you define yourself as an outsider, because really you have no choice but to define yourself as an outsider. Everybody else has defined you that way. If you learn to be secretive, because it's easier to be secretive than to be open and honest, if you start to look around at the culture with a different kind of eye, an eye which is looking constantly for things which signal that there are people out there who are like you. I think if you're looking around for all those things and trying to shape up an opinion of yourself based upon buried clues around you in the culture, all of those things and 1,000 others help you shape a different kind of sensibility to your straight sibling. If you're an artist and as an adult you start to use the feelings that you developed as a child in your art, and every artist does that, every artist churns over these early feelings, then I think what you have is art which is shaped by gay sensibility. And if I take a long time to make the argument, it's because I'm a little tired of the weary throwaway line that there is no such thing as the gay sensibility. Of course there is such a thing as the gay sensibility. Of course gay men and women think in some fundamental ways differently from straights. It is not just about what we do in bed. It is about the echoes in the culture of who we are or who we aren't. And it's how we deal with those things. It's the stories we tell to one another. It's the stories we tell to ourselves, which make us feel whole and healed. It's all part of that sensibility.
But the movement today is to assimilate, to be just as much like your next-door neighbor as you can, to have the adopted child and the picket fence. And
well, my choice is to be with a person who means so much to me. I don't know if I will go quite as far as the white picket fence, but I do like to have roots. And what we are trying to do together is put down roots, emotional roots. And my husband has a child, and I do my best to be a good stepfather. But am I ever going to be like my mom and dad? Nah.
You have had a number of gay characters in your novels, but I've read you've had trouble with the inclusion of gay characters in film.
Well, yeah, I've had trouble with the inclusion of gay characters in novels. I mean, it's happened that way, too.
So people are more comfortable with monsters than homosexuals.
I don't think this comes as any great surprise to either of us, but it's absolutely right. I mean, I think that there's still an awful lot of fear in this town, far more than the articles in Out about Hollywood or whatever would tend to suggest. There's the fear that somehow or other, if you are thought of as a gay creator or as a gay producer or whatever, that's all you will ever be. You will be defined by that three-letter word. And my experience has been, though there is a little bit of a problem where that's related, it's not large. I mean, when I go to a signing, when I sign at a gay bookstore and the straight audience comes in, they don't care. They get their book signed, they get smiles, they get well-treated. Clearly, if I'm in mid-America, if I'm in Alabama, it becomes more difficult. But I would say that in the last 20 years going on tour, I found it easier and easier and easier to mingle the audiences to, you know, just, it's so great, you know, Steve. You go to a signing and you see a gay couple and a family with their kids and older folks and, you know, every color, every race, just mingled in that line because they have a single passion, and the single passion is, yes, me, but also the fantastic, the imagination. The imagination is a great leveler because we all dream. We all have things which our imaginations throw up as means to explain ourselves to ourselves. And that's what this business is about. I think it's about pulling readers in from all sectors and saying, come join the collective dream.
This has been an interview with Clive Barker. For This Way Out, I'm Steve Pride.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Leo Garcia, Brian Nunes, Graham Underhill, Jason Lynn, Chris Ambidge, Rex Walkner, Alan Rieke, Martin Rice, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Thanks also to Don Rush and Pacifica Network News. Michael Jackson performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by grants from the Gill Foundation, the Kicking Assets Funds of the Tides Foundation, and by Queery.com at www.queery.com, by Planet Out, from designated contributions by Uncommon Clout Visa card holders who've chosen This Way Out, and through direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. Remember, you can also hear This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. Just point your browser to www.planetout.com and click first on Multimedia, then on Radio. For Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Lucia Chappelle. Thanks for listening to our program, which is distributed to radio stations in the U.S. via the Public Radio Satellite System and Pacifica's KU band, in Europe via World Radio Network's WRN1, in Australia via the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia's ComradSat, and via the Internet from the A-Infos Project. This Way Out airs globally on shortwave station RFPI, Radio for Peace International, and on more than 100 local stations around the world, including this community radio station. We just are sure you're going to stay tuned.